there was a Texas lawyer who went to Louisiana to do some duck hunting. Well, he actually might have been a federal judge. I'm not sure. But anyway, he made his way to Louisiana to do some duck hunting. And he had a good day. One of the ducks, however, that he shot fell outside of the land upon which he had permission to hunt. And it fell in somebody else's field. And there was, of course, a fence separating the two from each other. And he looked around, didn't see any reason why he couldn't climb the fence. And so he climbed the fence into the other person's land and went up to his duck. And as soon as he put his hands on his duck, the landowner drove up in a tractor, an old geezer from Louisiana, and said, "What are you doing?" And the Texas lawyer said, "Well, I shot this duck and it fell on your land, and I was just retrieving it." And the old geezer said, "Well, you understand that you're trespassing." And the Texas lawyer said, "Well, yeah, but I thought it would be okay if I just took my duck." And the old geezer said, "Well, actually, no. In Louisiana, we have a way of solving issues like this. We still do things by the Napoleonic Code. And here in Louisiana, we solve conflicts like this through the three-kick rule." And the Texas lawyer said, "Well, what in the world is the three-kick rule?" And the old geezer said, "Well, this is the way it works. I get down from my tractor, and we each get a chance to kick each other three times, and the one to give up first is the loser." And the Texas lawyer said that sounded good to him. So the old geezer went right up to the Texas lawyer and planted three kicks on him. First one hit him right in the knee and crumpled him down to the ground. Second kick came up and cut him right under the chin and sent his lower teeth into the roof of his mouth. And the third kick just came around and hit him up the head and just laid him flat. And the Texas lawyer said, after shaking his head and barely able to pull himself off the ground, said, "Well, I guess now it's my turn." Old Texas geezer said, "Nah, I give up. You can have the duck." When Adam and Eve find themselves in Genesis chapter 3, after what they committed at the tree, they feel as though they've just been victims of the Louisiana three kick. What has happened to humanity because of what happened at the tree is similar, as we talked to last week, as a puzzle that Pamela and I went into to Walmart to buy, and on the cover of the top, there is a nice picture of a forest scene or a meadow or maybe a wonderful Arctic lake. It's 500 pieces. It looks just like what we want to spend our Christmas holiday working on with my sister Marty and her husband, what's his name? Merritt. We take it home and we're really impressed with the picture on the top of the box. But we open it up, and then when we pour it out on the table, it's in 500 separate pieces. That's what's happened to humanity because of what happened to the tree. They've suffered the Louisiana three kick, and they have been shattered, and they have been broken apart. And so we are laying on a coffee table. We're laying on the dining room table, and we have been broken into 500 pieces. And we are experiencing the terrible, terrible ramifications of being so broken. We saw last week together that in Genesis, Moses has been telling us about three essential relationships that make us essentially human. What does it mean to be human? Well, what it means to be human is that we have a relationship with God, where he is our Father, because we've been created in God's image. And what it means to be created in God's image is that we, out of all the creatures of the sky, out of all the creatures of the sea, out of all the creatures that run across the face of the earth, human beings and human beings alone have been created in his image and have been related to him as his children. And so what it means to be human is to have a relationship with God as his children, where the main feature of that relationship is submission and obedience. We conduct ourselves as God's children in our relationship with Him when we submit to Him, when we bow to His will. But it also means to be in a very distinctive relationship to the earth. Because remember, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, God creates the man out of the earth. He reaches down into the dust, He reaches into the mud, and out of the dust of the earth, He creates the man. And so we have a very distinctive relationship to the earth. We are created out of the earth. But that's not our only relationship to the earth. We were created out of the earth so that God could position us over the earth to rule it and to subdue it, to fill it, to rule it, and to subdue it. No other creature on the face of the earth has that privileged position. Everything else on the face of the earth is to be ruled by the human being, but the human being is given the privileged position of ruling, of subduing, and of filling. So we are taken out of the earth so that we can be over the earth. Animals are to be subdued under us. We are to rule over the animals, and we are to fill the earth. So two relationships so far make us distinctively human. One, the relationship we have with God, which is to be a relationship characterized by the virtue of obedience and submission. Secondly, a relationship over the earth, where the earth is to be submitted to us. We are to subdue it. We are to rule it. We are to fill it. We were taken out of it so we could be over it. So we have something that we are obligated to rule. It's not God, mind you. God rules us. We submit to God. But God has placed us in a position where we are to rule the earth, and it is to submit to us. But there's a third relationship. The third relationship is that we have relationships with other human beings. A relationship that is not to be characterized by us ruling each other, you ruling me or me ruling you, you being subdued to me or you being submitted to me, but this is to be a relationship that is characterized, remember, by the term that Adam uses for the woman. She is to be his helper. He is to be helped and aided by her. Remember that this term helper is a term which God uses of himself frequently in the Old Testament. He is Israel's helper. He draws alongside Israel to deliver it, to aid it, to bless Israel. This is the way in which the woman is provided to the man. She is to be his helper, because frankly, fellows, remember, we need a lot of help. And so in the same way in which Yahweh draws aside Israel to help and deliver her, God has provided the man with a helper to complete him so that he can fulfill his obligation, they can fulfill their obligation of ruling, filling, and subduing the earth. And so this is a one-flesh relationship, a relationship then which is to be characterized by the virtue of love. These three relationships are what make us distinctly human. We're the only creatures to have these three relationships. But what we are seeing now in Genesis chapter 3 is that sin gave each of these the Louisiana three kick. And when sin was finished, each of these three relationships ended up looking like a Christmas puzzle that you bought at Walmart that you then emptied out on your dining room table, and it's broken into 500 separate pieces. And as a matter of fact, you know, there's always that one piece missing. So you never can complete that puzzle. That's how badly sin has decimated us. So we saw last week that whereas we are to be ruling over the earth and the creatures and the animals, what sin has introduced is that now the animals are at enmity with us. The snake now, and the children of the woman are at enmity. Remember that verse in Genesis chapter 3, where here is what Moses says. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and hers, so that now instead of being submitted to us, the serpents, the snakes of the field, are now actually quite, not, let's put it this way, not in submission to us. They strike us on the heel. They send venom into our veins. They curl around us and snuff the air out of us. Snakes are a lot of things, but they are not submitted to us, and we do not have rulership over them. If it is a rulership, it's a rulership in which they are in very, very strong rebellion. Notice what else Moses, however, tells us in Genesis chapter 3, this time verse 16. To the woman, he said, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain, you will give birth to children. Notice what is now introduced into this creation. Remember, one of the commands is that we are to fill the earth. But now what God has instituted as a result of sin is that the very experience of filling the earth is going to be quite traumatic, quite painful. Notice that that he uses the term twice. I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain, you will give birth to children. And so notice that whereas the relationship between human to human is supposed to be one of harmony, one of love, one of one fleshness, that the very first experience associated with filling the earth is that it is now characterized by pain and by agony. Oh, there's gratitude there. There is love and there is wonder. There is extreme pleasure when it's all over with. But notice, the race now is only propagated through pain. This is not the way it was supposed to be. You see, filling the earth now has now become a rather traumatic, painful event. Sin has caused that the propagation of the race is now to be characterized initially by pain. That's not the only time, however, that parents will experience pain in relationship to their children. Children will go on drugs, and parents will experience that trauma. Children will not live to adulthood, and parents will experience that trauma. Some children will be born stillborn, and parents will experience that trauma. Some children who are conceived will not be born, and parents will experience that trauma. So that when a mother buries her child, this again is pain and it is trauma which sin has introduced into the world. Filling the earth is a wonderful thing and it brings fruit to us. But what Moses wants us to know is that sin has now made the very notion of filling the earth an element which is not without its pain. Notice that that Moses continues. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Notice this is in the chapter which is introducing the results of sin. So this is not the way it was supposed to be. This is a result of their iniquity. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Notice that that originally, when we go back to Genesis chapter 1, in verses 26 and 27, where we are told what it means to be human, is that both the man and the woman were created in order to rule over the earth. That was supposed to be the relationship of rulership. God rules over us. We submit to God. We rule over the earth. It submits to us. But the relationship that God introduced between the man and the woman was a relationship of help and of oneness, of love. But notice what sin introduces. Sin introduces now a topsy-turvy perversion of what God introduced in one fleshness and in helperness. Now, the male isn't content to rule over the earth. In his fallenness, the male seeks to rule over the woman. There is now a perversion, and this is not what Paul is talking about in Ephesians chapter 5 when he introduces the order of the home. This is a perversion of God's one fleshness, where now in their sin, humans are now seeking to rule each other. We're no longer content to be the rulers over the earth. We now want to manipulate each other. We now want to rule each other. We now want to use each other. We have perverted the relationship that is to exist between humans. So whereas it was to be a relationship of helperness and of one fleshness, we have now perverted that into a relationship of rule. We now seek to be the government in each other's life. So we're not satisfied unless we're over you. We don't want to be your servants. We want you to be our servants. We don't want to serve you. We want you to serve us. We don't want to meet your needs. We want you to meet our needs. All of the selfishness and the perversion, the absence of love and the seeking to have someone meet our needs is all a result of the fact that we have been shattered and broken by the act of our first parents. What Adam and Eve introduced into the world is a set of perverted relationships between human beings. Pain, and now the pursuit of governing each other's lives. So notice how the New Testament wants to correct this idea, right? In the example of Jesus Christ, we are not to seek to rule each other, but instead we are to humiliate ourselves, not thinking about our own needs, but to be consumed with the needs of others, because we are not to seek to be the governors of each other's lives. Sin has totally perverted and ruined what we were supposed to be. And notice, Moses continues. To Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful, notice that's the third occurrence of the word pain, through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. Notice what else is introduced here. Whereas we are to be ruling the earth and it is to be subdued to us, notice that the earth now is going to fight back. The earth has taken its fist and the earth has clenched it. The earth has taken its teeth, and the earth has clenched its teeth, and it is striking out. It is in rebellion. It is in revolt. This is the earth in revolution. The earth now is not going to be submissive to us. If we take anything from the earth, it's because we had to enter into combat with the earth. We take now from the earth only through painful toil. Children enter the earth now only through painful toil. We take from the earth now only through painful toil. This was not the way it was supposed to be. Sin has ruined the relationship that existed between us and God. We rebelled against Him. We disobeyed Him, and that broke this relationship. Sin has ruined the relationship between us and the earth. It was supposed to be a relationship where the earth was subdued to us, but now it strikes out against us with clenched fist. And sin has ruined the relationship that was supposed to exist between human beings, where we were supposed to be in harmony, where we were supposed to aid each other, where we were the helpers and we were to experience the one fleshness, particularly in the intimacy of marriage. But now we seek to rule each other. Sin has taken that picture on the puzzle top, and it has broken it into 500 separate pieces, and we are lying there suffering from the effects of the Louisiana three-kick rule. But we're not finished yet. Notice that not only is the earth striking back, in painful toil are we only able to take from it, but notice, you will do this by the sweat of your brow, verse 19, until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. You understand, this wasn't the way it was supposed to be. Remember, when we were created out of the dust, out of the earth, in order to be over it. But notice what sin is doing. Sin is reversing everything that God introduced. Sin is taking an eraser and it is erasing everything that God wrote. We were taken out of the earth so we could be over it, but sin, as a result now, is putting us back into it. We are returning to the dust. Of course, this is an allusion. This is a metaphor, right, for death. This is a euphemism for death and the result of being buried 6 feet under. Euphemisms sometimes are very helpful things. They attempt to blunt the sharpness of the arrow. They attempt to blunt the sharpness of the spear. Gracie, our puppy, was quite ill last weekend, and so we had her to the emergency vet because she had eaten something in our backyard which she shouldn't have eaten, and she's half goat. Whatever it was that she had eaten was passing its way through her intestines, and it was causing her great discomfort. Just she was in pain, that poor puppy. So we had her to the emergency vet in order to help her. And once she was helped and she had received the medication she needed and the sedation that she needed, Pamela and I needed some after that too, but they wouldn't give us any sedation. I looked at the diagnosis chart that the doctor gave us, and he had a very euphemistic way of describing what was wrong with Gracie. And Pamela and I, after the emergency had filtered away, got a chuckle out of this. Here was his diagnosis: dietary indiscretion. Don't you love it? Dietary indiscretion. Yeah, boy, that, she had dietary indiscretion. It's called goat complex, right? She eats anything there is. Here is what Moses is trying to do with the reality of death. He's trying to be kind here. He's trying to blunt the tip of the spear, but the reality still is this. You were taken out of the earth so that you could rule over the earth. But what sin is doing is it's returning you to the earth. It was never supposed to be that way. Do you understand that the greatest insult to your humanity, the greatest insult to your humanity is burial? Because you were never meant to be put back into the earth. You were taken out of it so you could rule over it. But who's ruling who when you're buried? Who's over who when they put the 6 feet of dirt back on top of you? The earth is ruling you. Death is the greatest insult to your humanity. You were never meant to die. You were never meant to experience the insult of burial. But that's what sin has done to you. Sin has disrupted every aspect of your humanness, your relationship to God, your relationship to the earth, and your relationship to each other. And so this is why your greatest hope and that thing for which you should long the deepest and the most is your resurrection from the dead, which Jesus Christ will accomplish for you because he's already done it once. He is raised himself, and he will pass on to you the blessing of resurrection from the dirt when he returns in glory to reclaim his church. Here's what you and I, therefore, should be focused on as believers. We should be focused by the power of the Spirit on reclaiming these three relationships the way in which God intended them. Our life should be characterized, first of all, by lives of total submission to the will of God. Secondly, by relationships of love and of helping and aiding each other, not seeking to govern each other. Not seeking to have you serve me, but me seeking to serve you. And we should reclaim the rule over the earth. We should be merciful to animals. We should be environmentally minded. And we should be hoping for that great day of resurrection when we will once again be positioned in relationship to the earth the way in which God intended for us to be positioned. In this class, can we covenant to hold each other accountable to be in a submissive relationship with God? And can we hold each other accountable to be in relationships with each other which are not characterized by seeking to be over each other, but rather seeking to be the helpers, to be the aides, to be the lovers of each other? How are ways? What are the ways in which perhaps most profoundly and most popularly that we see these most often, do we see ourselves continuing the rebellion against God that we saw, first of all, in Genesis chapter 3? What are some ways in which we, like the earth, shake our fists at God? And we don't let the question go. Yeah. And where we enter into Job's problem, right, where ultimately it's to blame God for allowing the circumstance to have arisen. That is so true. Absolutely. What are some ways in which that happens, Steve? Yeah. Absolutely. So when we pursue our day with the attitude that we don't need to rely upon God, that we are self-reliant. You're absolutely right. This is a huge component of rebellion. I don't need you. I can take care of myself. I'm not really moment by moment dependent upon you. You're absolutely right. What are some ways in which we find ourselves seeking to rule each other rather than to be in harmonious, self-giving relationships with each other? How does that? What does that look like in a marriage? What does that look like in a marriage, or what does that look like in a relationship with children or with someone at the office? What does it look like to seek to rule someone in your marriages, to get your way in your relationship with your children or with someone at the office? Absolutely. Trying to underhandedly get someone to end up doing what they're really not obligated to do. Yes, absolutely. Manipulation is the pursuit of trying to rule somebody through underhanded deceitful means. What else? Yeah, absolutely. Which, by the way, is one of the healthier ways to do that. Yeah. It's a lot healthier than a passive aggressive attempt to rule each other. Right. Yeah. Yeah, like I have a ground to stand on any of these things here. Could we pray together this morning that the Spirit would strengthen us to renew our submission to God and to renew our commitment to be each other's helpers rather than each other's governors. Father, by your mercy, we pray for the Spirit's strengthening, that you would help our hearts to be submissive to you, to live in relationship to you in an unquestioned obedience. And would you, by the Spirit, strengthen us so that we would become the servants of each other. We would not seek to govern each other, to manipulate each other, but rather to be content in providing for each other generously. This is against sin, Father, and there's no way that we can do this without the Spirit. And so we cry out as needful children for your help to make us what we ought to be. We ask it through the Son and by the Spirit. Amen.